By the way, the retreat talks are recorded, so if you just want to sort of be present, because you want to be able to kind of take away some thoughts, notice so much about this really aggressive word that I've seen in so many vocations. It's the word called doubt. Doubt. For some reason, the evil one has authority over that word, doubt. You can think of your life, of all the times you've had doubt. Doubt in your abilities in grade school. That difficult time we call middle school. Thank God those days are gone, right? Sorry for you folks going into that with your kiddos, right? High school. Like all of those places of doubt, which just like, wow, let alone just normal doubt. All that stuff going on within me. But, oh my gosh, if your family was sort of difficult, that can be all the more challenging to doubt. And what I've noticed is this pattern that of doubt that can slowly resurrect in the lives of so many. If I just get married, if I just have kids, if I just get this house, if I just get the dog, all of the doubt's going to be gone. If I just become a pastor, if I just do this, if I just build this. And little by little, what I've noticed is that doubt begins to creep its way back into the hearts of so many people. One of the first things I want you to do is, have you ever looked at the places of the doubt in your life? In order for us to renew our marital love, I have to be able to understand a little bit more about really who I am. Really, who am I? Before the mystery of God and before all that's going on in my life, who am I? Doubt is so subtle because it doesn't present itself as an outright attack. It just begins to slowly creep in and affect a lot of things. The spouse who has doubt about their own beauty will maybe develop the vice of jealousy in some manner. Doubt in terms of, am I one who is loved? And that spouse could manifest perfectionism, or the helicopter spouse. You know, like everything has to be perfect or according to their terms. Or so one of the things I want you to begin to do is look out. Do you really know places of doubt that have come through your journey? Let's pretend it's prior to your marriage. And you look back on yourself during that time and you say, man, have I ever recognized that those little places of doubt sometimes, oftentimes, I will say, manifest themselves in the marriage? Now look, a retreat is only as deep as you allow it to be. So let me just call a timeout. If you want to check out and say, I don't have doubt, I don't even know what doubt is, I've never had doubt because I'm Superman, then your retreat will go that deep, nowhere. Because you are immune from struggle. But the doubts that often people say, oh yeah, this manifested in my marriage, or this can, look, let's be honest, all that stuff had a lot of its seeds in our formative years. This is not chucking rocks at our families. This is just helping us to get the dandelion out by the roots as opposed to just chopping the head off. Let's just pull it up at the gut. So have you ever really written down some of those doubts? Where the doubts are will come the pattern of sin. Because all the doubts manifest through action so that I don't have the doubts, so I want to overcome the doubts in my actions. Those actions can be carried out in the marriage as well. Unquestionably. I'm not necessarily talking about the deeper pain of trauma and abuse and all that, but although that does come through as well, that does manifest itself. I'd like to share a story of one of the sisters I've been took care of on the retreat. Kind of changed facts a little bit, but you still get the guts. Sister comes in and says she's really having problems with one of her vows of obedience. She told me, yeah, let's use this to teach. Lovely sister, joyful sister, not the edgy sister. I said, well, sister, why are you always disobedient? Well, it's when I'm angry. It's like, oh, I got it. Angry sister becomes the disobedient sister. Sister, why are you disobedient? Well, it's when I feel rejected and isolated. Got it. The isolated, rejected sister becomes angry, and therefore she becomes, right, disobedient. Sister, where did it all come from? Do you know? No, Father, I don't know. When I was a little girl, we moved 10 times in the first 10 years. I went to this school, and I loved the school so much, and it was 11-month school. I came back, and she kind of alluded to the fact that during that time, she became a woman, so the girl she went off with was not the girl that came back. And all of a sudden, she came back, and her mom, and I never knew my daddy, by the way, Father. I never knew my dad. She comes back, and she's this beautiful blossoming, whatever, 12, 13, 14-year-old, and mom had this idea to marry her to a 20-year-old man. And all of a sudden, as sister's vomiting this all out, she begins to realize the obvious connection. I am so angry at my mother that any woman in authority over me, I will be disobedient to. Now, sister doesn't need to spend the rest of her life confessing disobedience. As a matter of fact, she had the courage to make the connection that, yeah, that's why I do what I do. If there's a pattern of sin in your life, can I just recommend that it probably has its place in various doubts in your journey? The doubts can be healed by the virtue of faith, love, and hope, by those virtues. But until we get to that place, you may continue the cycle of this pattern. Do you think God made you to doubt? And do you really think that you are loving fully if you have doubts about within your own heart, your purpose, your dignity in the eyes of God, etc.? Are you really loving to the best of your ability? I don't know you, but I would say my experience is that the answer is no. No. It's not possible. It's just not possible. You can only compensate as a one-armed paper hanger for so long, and then sooner or later we're going to need the other arm. And that arm, if it's broken or tied up, when will it heal? When? So my first kind of point for you to chew on, are you willing to go to the places of doubt? Your spouse probably knows them all. But have you and your spouse ever made the connection to why they come out like they do? Sister only became disobedient because, well, this was a safe target. Be disobedient to my superior. That's the first point I just really want you to begin to think about. Now, there's a beautiful reality. I'm going to read a passage from Matthew's gospel. It's the passage that came to my heart about this retreat. It's Matthew 9, 10 to 13. When he sat at table in the house, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and sat down with Jesus and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" When he heard it, he said, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. For I came not to call the righteous, but sinners." The vocation of marriage has within it this healing grace from your spouse. So a spouse's individual healing absolutely affects the spousal communion. Okay? Like, individual healing is no, it doesn't exist in marriage because two are one. Maybe that's like no aha moment. But for those that linger in the doubt, those, because you're going to pull back, you're going to withdraw emotionally, you're going to go to your man cave when the doubts start to come up. There's a woman cave too, but the general idea, right? You're going to go to the place. Granted, two sinners were brought together to make one sinner. That's your marriage. But why does God speak of this Adam and Eve communion? Why does he speak of it? Yes, from the side, this rib, comes this woman. And now they complement each other. They complement, not criticize. They complement. They fill up what is lacking. Your need for healing is not just for your children, please. You can be a perfectly healed spouse that has no love for their spouse. And that's not the best marital love to show your children. You can be super Catholic. And if you have not entered into the mystery of your marital love and the children, they will be affected. I mean, I'm just going to speak really candidly. You know that better than I. And in the culture that I see now with these young people, the safest thing to do is just not to believe. Don't believe anybody until they pass your test. And we can blame media, we can blame a lot of things. Really poor actions by people, I've got it. But I also want to say this. There's too much of disbelief happening in the human heart with so many people that I cannot figure out, is this is this pervasive smoke that people are inhaling, is it just choking the virtue of faith within them? I just don't believe. Why don't you believe? Just because I don't. And they don't know why they don't believe, but because they don't believe, because they don't believe, then I don't believe. And I'm forced to accept them because I can't share with them the dialogue of faith because the language is not in common. Faith is other-centered. Disbelief is self-centered. It will always be that. I believe in what I believe, so therefore, since I don't believe, it does not exist. The doubt that can trickle its way into the human heart has with it numerous very real fruits. So I'm going to throw out a few of these fruits for you and actually try to have you talk it through with your spouse. Here's what I want to try to do, at least in my talks. Father Kevin Regan is here. He'll be giving two of the talks as well. And we didn't really talk about the talks, so I'm just going to let the Spirit kind of move. But when doubts creep in, they attack the virtue of hope. If doubts begin to take authority. Now you see the result of this. If I have no hope in whatever, I'm going to go out and make a name for myself. I'm going to take control of something. I need to do something. So all of a sudden, the communion of the spouse walking together, one's off on his own journey, trying to overcome the fears that are deep within the human heart. The person with this lack of hope really can struggle from discouragement. I've never really thought about the negative Nancy in the marital vows until I was preparing for the retreat. Are you the negative Nancy or the Debbie Downer? Why do we have to have people over? Oh my gosh, it's so much work. Meanwhile, my spouse is like, hey, can we have people over? No, why do we have to have people over? Why? And I get it. Everybody's got to pitch in. Don't misunderstand. I'm talking about the culture of your marriage. What is the culture of your marriage? Is it a hopeful place? Is it a place where you're like, honey, what are we going to do? How are we going to help? Or is it just like, look at the predominant vision of your marriage right now. What is it? Is it godly centered? Assuming it's somewhat faith-based, you're here. Is it other-centered? If I asked you, what's your primary goal now? We want to retire. Okay, then what? Or we want to save for this. Okay, then what? But I'm talking about the deeper understanding. Secondly, what I've noticed is doubts lead to just living fantasies in your head. Now you can see how this affects marriage, at least if you're honest. Why is it like this? I wish I had done this. I wish I had done that. And the voice of doubt gets really loud. Right? Like it starts getting control. Why'd you marry that one? Why'd you buy this house? All of these things begin to just like speak and speak and speak and speak. And you know, I can say it comes from a place of doubt. Because something is pinging off of you, within you, on this journey of faith with your spouse. Something's trying to grab you and pull you aside. And let's just assume it's not the kids. Like, they're sort of the shrapnel sometimes in the marriage. And the kids will be kids, and I get that. Unless you've gone through like a really terrible sickness with a child, let's just assume that God gave you the grace to handle your children if you respond to that. A really heavy sickness can be a real game changer. I get that. But God does give the grace with every little baby. Your heart gets bigger to love more. So again, this doubt begins to sort of creep its way in. And because the doubt begins to speak, we start to just let our imaginations kind of go wild. And this can lead down to impurity. This can lead to idolatry. Oh man, I just want the boat. I just want this thing. You ever recognize that that can cripple the relationship? Let's say the spouse, husband is seeking something. The spouse, the female, is speaking some emotion. And then all of a sudden, they're just in totally different directions. We need an addition. But she's like, let's have more time together. And all of a sudden, she's not on board for the addition, and well, he's not on board for the emotion. Again, I ask you to go deeper and to not spend the rest of your life just saying, I'm disobedient, like sister. She doesn't need to do that. She doesn't need to do that. She can actually get to the core wound, to the core struggle. Doubt also, I've seen, can lead to laziness, maritally and spiritually. Why do I have to do that? And all of a sudden, you just start withdrawing into yourself. You may be going to church, but your heart's not there. Your heart's somewhere else. The person with doubt also, and this again is within the heart, has a critical spirit. They're just critical. They can notice what's wrong, but they cannot see what is good. Now, taking those siblings of doubt, those fruits, imagine how much different your life would be. Just your life, not your married life, but just your life would be if some of those places of doubt were addressed in your heart. Let's actually say there is a connection. What the Lord seeks from you is your own personal, like, sanctification, your call to living out a holy marriage. But it does demand something very deep from you. It demands a willingness for you to come out of yourself and at the same time become aware of what's within your own heart. A healthy marriage, a healthy spouse, we could say, has a freedom within his or her heart before the spouse. Second reading today, Abba, Father, I no longer call you slaves. The tension between being a son or a daughter and a slave is so magnificent and so hidden. Will you have the spirit of slavery within your own heart? Right? Slavery rooted in my fears and my struggles. Another point I would just like you to begin to think about is, do you know the fears that lie within your own heart? Perfect love, James says, casts out fear. Now again, I'm not talking about children. I'm worried that they're going to be safe in school. Well, who isn't? I'm talking about the kind of fears that expose you, that make you unwilling to be vulnerable. St. Augustine said so beautifully, Lord, you were within and I was without. We leave our bodies, we leave ourselves because of the fear within me. So I live on the outside. I kind of look at myself from the outside. Have you ever gone deeper into the mystery of some of the fears? Not long ago, I was in a conversation with somebody, and I don't know what he thought I was. He said, so are you married? And I said, well, no, but yes, like, I don't know. So I just said no, because if I said no, but yes, that would have just totally opened up confusion, right? And he was talking about his wife. And then he said something very interesting. He said, so you don't know anything about marriage? And I said, well, I'm not so sure about that. I said, I'm actually have a spouse. I tried to go there, but it just stopped, right? I gave my life to the church, mother church, you know, blah, blah, blah. Forget it. Like, it was like, and at the end, he's like, oh, so you're not married, right? It's like, yeah, whatever. But then, like, I want to be honest. Like, maybe it's good priests remain celibate because it reminds you that there's something greater. Like that the scripture actually says there's no marriage in heaven. Well, what is heaven? It's the marital love of Jesus Christ for us. So there is marriage in heaven. It's the deeper mystery of love. It's something that is written in your heart, in your marriage. Very, very deep. But what is the foundation of marriage? Love. And what is the foundation of love? Sacrifice. That is the foundation of love. Nothing less. It's not attraction. It's not similarities. It's not mutual, like, excitement around each. That's really not it, folks. You actually marry to sacrifice for your spouse. That's really marriage. And you said, yeah, I'll do this for the spouse sitting next to me, and I did it in the same manner. I just lied on a floor on my ordination day and said, yeah, I'll do it for the church. It's the same thing. And if you're willing to go there, you can say, yeah, like, look at all the times in my marriage where I was unwilling to sacrifice. I pulled back. And I bet if you spend a little time, you'll see that you were feeding the doubts. When you pull back and you're like, I want to buy these golf clubs without a spouse. And finances already struggle. And all of a sudden, you know, like you go deeper and deeper and deeper. And you're like, I got it. I understand why. Why did you do that? Why were you disobedient to your spouse when she said, no, we don't have the money? Why? What was driving you? What was driving the lie? Get there. Because that's how some little sister healed. She recognized where the doubt came from. And then it gave her the freedom to know, now I know why I do what I do. There is a certain fear in love. You have to be vulnerable. And I imagine in everyone's heart, there's times when you felt vulnerable and then you may have been hurt. In the bond and prior to the bond. But are those things still manifesting? Do those stinking things come back up every once in a while? Let's say you had a stinking family, but you don't have the courage to not go there for Thanksgiving and Christmas. So you go there, but you know it's going to be awful because the family's sort of circus town, right? Or it's got its issues, whatever. But anyway, every time you go, now you got kids, you're worried about your kids because, well, it's circus. So you're not at peace a couple days before and certainly not at peace the day of. You go to Mass together Thanksgiving because you're a church-going family and your stomach is not at peace. And then you go to the family like, God, is this thing over? Like, when's the turkey done? You can't wait to leave. But then there's like the post-recovery Thanksgiving. Like, that's like 2-3 days. But you don't see it that way. You're just like, thank God that's over. But let's say that happens every Thanksgiving. That's joyful. And then you go to Christmas, right? And you got the 9-day novena leading up to Christmas, right? And you're like, oh, great. Emails, right? And everybody's emailing critical, negative. And you're like, oh, it's great. Can't wait till Santa arrives. And then you go, and maybe it's at your house. That's even better. All of them come over and critical in your house, right? Like, you want to like sponge bath the walls. But anyway, you're there. And then all of a sudden, it's like the 3-4 days. And you know, this happens year after year. And all of a sudden, you're like, oh, Bing Crosby, it's the most wonderful time of the year. You're like, get a grip, Bing. It's not. It's just not. And then all these coping mechanisms come in. Eat too much, drink too much, ice. And all of a sudden, what happens? Well, a place that was supposed to be of grace is now a place of struggle. It's just a question. How do we even prepare for those fears and those times in our lives? Spouse one time, he says, yeah, when I go to my wife's family, he's like, I just drink because I can't handle them. Well, that's not exactly the solution, right? And then they don't like him, and then they tell her they don't like him because he's drinking all the time and disengaged. And you know what I mean? It just creates this thing, and like, you don't like my family. Well, of course I don't like my family. You don't like your family. And before you know it, it's affected people. But yet, we don't know why there's the fear. And the doubt. And then it creates this struggle. I'm asking you this after this talk. These are probably things you've talked about 100 times. But have you ever talked about them in the context of mercy and within your own doubts? This is how I feel. This is my experience. Because we have to go there to understand, what do you think is the fallout? Do you just recover the next day? Is it a 5-day prep, 7-day breakdown? What? Look in your life. What's been the pattern? And your spouse can say, well, I know you're like that, so I just work later. Okay, and then the kids run the house. And next thing you know, you're angry, your spouse has worked. Oh my gosh, look at the cycle. Look at the madness. What's going to break it? I'm really proposing to you that little sister that got to the heart of why she was so angry in disobedience, I'm showing you that that's a miracle with a small m. believe it or not. Because you can see where that disobedience goes. She can be a rebel. And when she's a rebel, well, she could put herself in a bad place with her vows. I mean, that thing, that story, that plane's getting ready to take off. Unless she gets a handle on it and gets to the very core. So how can you understand? How can we spend this little time talking? Number one, I want you to talk about some of the doubts maybe you never, you see where they came from? Number two, have you ever kind of put the doubts and fears and connected them together? Sometimes they feed off each other. Do you end up sort of lacking hope? This crazy imagination where you just need to get away from everybody. Just need to get away. Okay, fine. Your mind gets away even though your body's still in the house. But can I tell you, sooner or later your body's going to want to go. Sooner or later your body's going to pull back as well because your mind can't, your mind eventually is going to have the authority over your body. And you're like, ugh, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to go to my man cave. All of a sudden, your imagination, your mind has controlled you. And then that can really lead to some spiritual laziness and an unwillingness to overcome some interior faults that you have. So those are some of the thoughts I'd like you to kind of take away. What's a great way to kind of talk about it? Number one, pray. Pray. Pray together before you talk. And have a little courage to go to one of the doubts. Yeah, like, I got it. Like, honey, this is how I have seen where some of the doubts come up. I know they're there. But this is how I think they come out sometimes. It may really have nothing to do with your spouse, but that spouse is an easy target. You have to also recognize that it's a very holy place. That moment is a very holy place, if you can go there. What do I mean? Well, somewhere in that experience of the doubt, there could be pain and fear and a wound. You can't go in there with like your hacksaw and take it out of your spouse. Like, oh, let me just pickaxe it and get it out. It doesn't work like that. It's a gentle love that addresses it and kind of chokes the lie that's at the heart of the doubt. And then that cancer dies and then you just pull it out like a dandelion. But if you're like, oh, let me just pickaxe it. Just come on, honey, just get over it. It was 20 years ago, pickaxe. Right? And all of a sudden you're like, well, great, you missed the target. It was the other arm. And all you're doing is hacking away because that's what we do, we hack. Can't do that. A vulnerable spouse is the most sacred place. A vulnerable spouse. The one that opens her heart or his heart, opens their body. That place deserves not sacrifice, but mercy. He didn't come to call the righteous, man. He came to call the sinners. And the most beautiful thing, if you're really willing to go there, is that a prayerful spouse can be a medicine for those doubts and fears. A spouse that wants to heal doesn't mean that you're all there. But that spouse, it's like, man, I'm working on myself. I'm working on it. I'm trying. That spouse will receive the grace to be an instrument of love for you in that place. They may not do it perfectly. And here's what I want to help you realize. When you start to heal as a spouse and you begin to identify these little things, sometimes the evil one comes really hard at your spouse. Because the evil one knows that in the marital bond, that other spouse is an instrument of grace for you. So if you start to open yourself and realize, oh, this is where the doubt comes, this is where the doubt comes, then all of a sudden what happens, folks, is that the other spouse is going to get hammered. And then they may display a weakness. And instead of showing mercy, you just pounce on it. So you're asking for mercy, but you come in with a sledgehammer. Oh, mercy, Lord, heal me. Heal me of all my pains. And your spouse has some weakness or failure. And you're like, bam-o. And then the wall goes up and the healing doesn't happen. It's supposed to be that if you're working on the wounds and the struggles and trials of your life, and then your spouse starts to have some struggles and trials, that's actually a really beautiful grace, because then that spouse doesn't think I'm all that. And brought down to your level, and then there's the communion where you're like, oh, you're always fixing me. You always help. No, it's the communion of the love. It's the communion. It's eye to eye and heart to heart, body to body. Not this, I'm the one that never has any struggles, just you. Marriage would be great if you just, it's not marriage. That's a slavery. That voice says to my spouse, if you would just fix yourself or just heal, then the marriage is great. Not so sure. Because if you're merciful, the mercy of God should be flowing through and helping to heal the wounds if they're open. If they're open and want to receive the grace, and I'm assuming all of you do. That's why you're on retreat. And then after you do that, have a tremendous sensitivity to that moment and try to make one resolution how things can be different, how things can be understood a little bit differently. I don't know, but I think what keeps marriages from just like blowing off the charts in holiness is an unwillingness to sacrifice. So it's not poverty. I've seen poor marriages and they're happy. I've seen sick couples, couples who have physical sicknesses, and actually really beautiful. So it's not that. I've actually seen couples with some mental illness, depression, and yet all things being equal, like they really love each other sacrificially. It's not sexuality, because I've actually worked with couples who couldn't be intimate for a variety of reasons, and they actually really, really loved each other. So it's actually the willingness to sacrifice. Like, this is the spouse I love so deeply. And I know it's not the perfect spouse. I'm not the perfect spouse. But I love this one so deeply that I'm willing to give mercy. A tremendous love of mercy. So I'm going to close this first talk. You can get time. Your schedule is 6 o'clock, we'll have dinner. You can go in anytime, 6:15, that window. You don't have to be there exactly at 6. Don't sweat it. You and your spouse might want to take a walk. I don't know if it's hot outside or raining. I encourage you not to go to your rooms. There's a lot of little spaces that you can find. What they said about like the vents, if you're on the phone calling home, I just invite you to do it away from your room, because everybody will hear the conversation. In the back of the church, there's a sign-up sheet. We're going to have all-night adoration tonight after the talk. So some of you guys might want to get some coffee and get a little shot in your arm, but we'll do all-night adoration. You can pick an hour of time to come and pray. We'll have a little healing time with the other priests and I, okay? Glory be to the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit. As it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be, world without end. Saint Joseph, and may Almighty God bless you, couples, Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Okay. okay, guys, so go and spend some time with your spouse. Please go deep. Don't talk about the kids. Talk about face-to-face, heart-to-heart. Kids will be there, but we need happy marriages.